Hello, everyone listening at home. Today we have Allison McDonald in the office with us, who is going to be sharing her story regarding mental health and wellness and what got her involved in the mental health field. Care to introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. My name's Allison McDonald, and it's my pleasure to be here with Eric Lohr, and here we go.
Here we go, indeed. So did you want to start with just talking about, you know, some of the recent things that have happened, and then we could work backwards, or did you want to start talking about a memory or something that's happened or troubled you with the mental health system?
Well, I like the recent. I always like talking about the recent. Even in the support groups that we have, we talk about the most recent things that are going on in our life and not dwell on the past too much. Recently I have been doing really well. My current mental health is pretty awesome. Because I have a tremendous amount of self-care, probably more than the average person. I get enough sleep, I eat well, I exercise, I have good relationships. And, you know, at 54, it's taken me a long time to get to this point, but so I'm at a really good point right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a little bit over a year ago, I had a challenging time. I made it through that with, of course, my medication and my counselors and my good relationships, my healthy relationships. So I made it through it. Yeah, I...
Would you say that in your years of being with NAMI and working in this field that you've made the acquaintances needed for success?
Yes, and it's still a work in progress. You know, it's always a work in progress. I don't know if it will always be that way. Yeah, but I have I've met some really wonderful people in my life, you know, from the staff at NAMI to people that I've met in support groups, super duper support. I know I've always say this, like my grandmother said to me, if you could count your best friends on one finger, you're a lucky person. And I am very lucky because I can probably count a hand and of people. It's taken me some time to reach this point in my life where it's very healthy and positive. Growing up, yeah, it was hard. And I think the classes, the peer-to-peer that I teach, teaches you tools, you know, how to live well. And it's been a reinforcer as I teach it so many times. I learn something new in every class. It just kind of reinforces it. And I know.
If there is any tool from, say, the peer-to-peer class that you wanted to share with people listening at home, what would that be?
Well, I think one thing that just pops in my mind is the communication with people. We learn about I statements. I don't know if you know those because I taught you them, but
pretend I don't for a minute.
Yeah. So, you know, when you're something is bothering you and you have something bothering you with another person, there's a little formula to teach you how to communicate with that person so that they don't become defensive and you can get your needs met. Instead of saying something, if I was talking to the person that I had the problem with and I say, you did this and and it made me feel really bad, that tends to make the other person maybe defensive.
And you know, then nothing gets done, and they start yelling at you.
Yeah, it's just awful.
It goes awful, yeah.
And then, you know, when you start off with saying, like, I feel this way, I feel sad when you didn't talk to me before you you did something or something. I don't know, but mm-hmm. but you say the I statement, you say I feel this when, and that makes it a lot easier. We practice in the class and the peer-to-peer class, and we kind of do scenarios, and we just all realize, you know, it does make a difference. And I'm realizing communication is so key. And so that's one thing that I've learned in the peer-to-peer. I've also learned mindfulness activities, breathing activities. And the more I learn, the more I realize, you know, some people have trauma, and breathing exercises might be hard for them. So I've gotten some books on that, you know, the trauma that people mm-hmm. might have. I've definitely learned more about other people, like through peer to peer, like learning the different diagnoses and the different people in the classes. You know, we get to know each other and see our differences, and it's been really fulfilling.
And of course, the classes are confidential as well, so we won't go into any details regarding that. But they are a wonderful resource if you're just trying to figure out a little bit about mental wellness and the troubles and struggles that many people, you know, suffer from on the daily.
The resources too, and I think my next step in NAMI is to build, you know, maybe a library where we can mm-hmm. have some resources, books to read, it's kind of right up my alley because my favorite books to read are self-help books anyways. So I think it'll be, you know, once it gets going and we have some volunteers that want to help build it, that'll be great. Yeah.
Another question for you is, you know, what introduced you to NAMI in the first place?
Oh, it was like 2003 or 2004, maybe 2004. And I think one of my friends that I was in a group with recommended me to go to the NAMI peer-to-peer course, and I had no clue what that was, and all I could think of was, is my insurance gonna pay for this? And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, how is this, you know? And then realizing that it's free, mm-hmm. I don't think that ever sunk in. I was still like thinking, is my insurance gonna pay for this? Can I do this class? You know, is this okay? But it's free, and it was
awesome. There too, which is nice.
Yeah, and I didn't even, like, at that time, I didn't even, you know, it's like every time you do peer-to-peer, you get different things out of it, and, you know, just being there and, like, you know, just the only thing I remember about going to peer-to-peer for that first time was one of the bits of advice was, like, if you're in crisis, then and you don't know who to call, you can get your phone book and just put your finger on the first name you see and call that person. If you can't, you know, sometimes when you're in crisis, it's so hard to get anything done. And that little thing, I mean, that could have been just something said, someone said. It's not part of the curriculum of peer-to-peer, but, you know, someone said that. And sure enough, like, I was in crisis and didn't have anyone to call, and I ended up calling a best friend from high school, and she was totally supportive. And, yeah, so that you know, I mean, if anything, you know, the little things that you do get out of the class make such a difference. You know, it could be one little thing, like how to look in your phone book for help, you know. So
it sounds to me like peer-to-peer has been a fabulous resource for you. Do you use all those skills just daily, or is it something you just have in like a handy toolkit if something goes wrong?
Yeah, I don't know if I use them. I'd say a handy toolkit, you know, kind of just ingrained in me. Yeah, it's a really good support. I sometimes pull out my binder if I'm in crisis and I'm having a really hard time. Then I pull out my binder and sometimes they'll have like activities you can do to help you. Like
just like small word searches or something like that, or
no, like we had the relapse prevention grid, and you know, sometimes people it's hard to teach this, because you know, it's like I have to kind of like you know, make sure everyone is understanding what the process is. But, you know, like I said, everyone gets a different thing out of the peer-to-peer. But, you know, like the curriculum from a couple years ago had a relapse prevention grid, and it talked about your thoughts, feelings, and actions when you were going through your crisis and what you were going to do in that situation. And I pulled that out a couple times because, you know, like when I didn't have enough money to support myself, mm-hmm. that was one of my events. And, you know, like it says what I did, what I felt, and, you know, what I did to that, you know, like, you know, how I handled it. And so that was really helpful. That was the curriculum from the previous peer-to-peer. It's a new curriculum now. The activities I can pull out and you know, do some of the mindfulness activities, the breathing and meditation. Sometimes, you know, I keep my binders around so that I can go back and say, okay. It's kind of like, I don't know if anyone listening like knows WRAP classes, WRAP. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I did hear about it in passing before, but I never did look into it.
Yeah, I mean, similar to that, they teach you tools and stuff to living with mental illness. And so, yeah.
Have you ever found one that just didn't work for whatever reason?
Not as much. That's a good question. I really believe in the curriculum of NAMI, so you know, I know all their suggestions and everything. They work for me pretty well. But like I said, some people have reasons like trauma or other reasons that things don't work for them. And so they don't have to do those things in the class if they don't feel. But I feel good that I'm a teacher, that I like kind of stand behind my curriculum. Mm-hmm.
I think that's pretty important, you know, if you don't believe what you're selling, you know, it doesn't really work as well.
Yeah. It is so wonderful to see people that want to go on the path to recovery, and like when they're willing to do that, I am 100% for them, with them. It's really awesome to see. I've made connections like in my life, at my jobs, at my in the peer-to-peer classes, in support groups, sometimes family, a lot of my jobs. I found that a lot of people are really supportive of mental wellness, and when they hear NAMI and what it's all about, they usually the people in my life, you know, really are supportive. And I don't know if I've made like
professional connections.
I kind of like try to be like everyone else and have a job that, you know, that that is out there, that, you know, that can work for everybody. I've found that I've been opportunities at NAMI have been great, but I don't base my whole life on just working for that. I try to have like
a bit of variety, spice, so to speak.
There's so many opportunities out there, and I think it's just, you know, being organized in my life where I can read about them and see what there is to offer. I think I try to find my wellness before I find any job. I've always been one who doesn't take the higher paying job, mm-hmm. you know, because I want to go at my pace and what I can do. Mm-hmm.
And the soul paying job, so to speak.
Yeah, the soul paying job. Yeah, so.
So were you always aware of your mental struggles?
I think later high school, first it started out with like thinking I had learning disabilities, and reading comprehension was really hard for me. Beginning college time, I started having symptoms that were not I don't want to say normal, but just challenges with my mental health. And then had to get on medication and all that stuff. But it's kind of funny now, like in retrospect, when I see people going through that same stuff, I think they need a lot of love and support. And there's a lot to learn out there in life. I think I'm going back to peer-to-peer, but like that's just one 8-week course where you can reinforce some good tools. And sometimes we don't get that in our homes or in our schools. So it's a matter of seeking it out, But I, so I think, you know, from, you know, early college, you know, just when I realized I wasn't getting my homework done and getting, just wasn't having a healthy lifestyle, I realized I needed help. Yeah, so.
And that proved to be kind of a growing experience for you, it sounds like, moving from having these issues into something closer to advocacy.
Yeah, yeah. It took a while, but, and you know, I hope I can do that. I mean, it's a responsibility, and, you know, I'm not perfect at it, but I've learned, and, so now after learning and being a participant and, in programs and doing the work, I'm more able to be an advocate. Yeah, much more now. Mm-hmm. So.
And it definitely sounds like you've tried to help a lot of people along the way. And were there any people who really stood out as your supports in all this?
Yeah, yeah. Like I, my best friend and I. And my current boyfriend and some wonderful supervisors at work. My last job was super. I look at all that and I'm kind of like in awe and like, you know, and me being wanting to be in an advocacy position now, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, they were so good to me. I don't know if I, and I know like, my pastor at work, he said, when comparison happens, contentment ends. And so I can't compare myself to all of them, but like, I can learn from them. And, so I think I, you know, I'm at that point where, yeah, I'd like to give back and do that. Yeah. So it's been quite a road.
If you were looking back on all of it and could just tell your, you know, college age self when all this trouble started, you know, what would you have to say to her?
Oh, man. I just smile because I think of what was said to me and what things worked and what things didn't. One of my friends at the time said, Allison, you just have to finish college, no matter what, just finish college. And that's all she said. And that's the only thing that got me to finish college. I mean, it's amazing. The smallest things you say to these younger people could change their world. And, you know, just in that support, you know, it's going to be okay. And I think the family-to-family classes really help with, they probably have some tools that families could use for their loved ones with mental illness. But I mean, like, just being heard and
finding their voice.
Yeah, yeah. Some people get so busy in their lives, they don't have time to really just take the time to be there for someone. So,